This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
3, 2, 1.
Following program is intended for mature audiences.
This is Max Headroom. And what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
You're listening to the IT in the D Show.
Just where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit?
Beyond the Sun?
Any of those, right?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Anything but that! No!
I used to hang out at the Mugumbu Bar. It was a rough place, the seediest dive on the wharf, populated with every reject and cutthroat from Bombay to Calcutta. It's worse than Detroit.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Then don't come! Shut up!
Dig, you IT geeks. This is Dre DiMatteo from Sons of Anarchy. You are listening to IT in the D.
What happens when you tap the angry beaver in the bumhole?
Exactly.
Come on.
What price?
What the hell with it? I'm calling a break. We'll come back to the D Show.
Hi, this is Ralph Macchio, and you're listening to IT in the D Show. Wax on, you know what.
So yeah, you have no boots.
No.
You have no gloves.
No.
You have no hat.
No.
You have no scarf.
No.
You have no scraper.
No.
How long have you lived in Michigan?
All my life.
You, sir, are an idiot.
I don't care.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zapka. Sweep the leg. Listening to IT and the D Show. No mercy.
I may have to wipe the geek off.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, John Kreese from the Karate Kid movie. And you're listening to IT and the D.
Yes, that's it!
Are we at a break yet?
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT and the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds!
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 What is a nerd?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
This is Scott Steiner, Big Papa Pump. The IT and the D Show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
You're in your underwear, I'm in my underwear. Here, let's hang out.
No, I'm sorry, honey, I have a headache.
I definitely want to see Bob in his underwear, that's a fact.
Hello, everybody, this is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Men. I'm a techie, I'm a nerd, fellow podcaster. My favorite podcast is IT and the D.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
It's just too big. It's way too big.
Really? Should we talk about this? Tag team. Should I keep going or should I stop?
We just lost our clean tag on iTunes.
This is Robert Hayes, the Ted Stryker to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the Mugumbu Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
Is there such thing as a meat hangover?
I love my Monday meat stick.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. Tough guy. Ho!
My name is Michael Zapsik from AMC's Comic Book Man. You're listening to IT and the D. Comics.
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
The question isn't what are we going to do. The question is what aren't we going to do.
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
Live from Podcast Detroit, this is the one and only IT and the D Show. We are here at episode 132. And
often imitated, never duplicated.
And you're listening to...
Often slandered, never...
But you guess what? You're listening
whatever.
To...
Usually reviewed afterward.
Yeah. The number 1, 2, and 3 ranked technology podcast on SoundCloud this week. We are hanging out in beautiful Ferndale, Michigan. This is Bob, the sales guy, always here with Dave the Geek. Nuri, the FNG, is actually in the house. Find us online, itinthed.com.
We're still waiting on the official explanation of where you were last week.
Yeah, I go away for 1 week, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, he's back.
He's under suspicion.
Seattle. It wasn't the Philippines. It wasn't Korea. It was Seattle. Nothing bad happened in Seattle.
Everything bad happens. They make – I don't know what they do there. Shout out to
– Starbucks.
Starbucks. Yeah, exactly. Shout out to Randy and Ian in Twitterville. Follow us on the Twitter /ITND. Give us a like on the Facebook. Give us a review on the iTunes. And we have an app out on iOS and Android, Podcast Detroit. You can listen to us and all our other great shows.
It's actually getting pretty good reviews.
Absolutely. We got 44 shows now on the network, everything from this to that and everything in between. So if you – yeah. If you like podcasts, definitely give Podcast Detroit.
Yeah, for those of you that are still out there that don't know, it's more than just us with this, hit PodcastDetroit.com. We do. We have everything from sports shows to music shows. The guy that for you locals that are listening, the guy that sings Forward Down the Field at Lions games has a show on our network. I've had to use a couple hours before us tonight.
I saw him in the parking lot. I did.
Red Wings alumni.
The Red Wings alumni.
We just signed Cassie Sobelton, who's on Channel 7 once a month talking about wellness and healthy, which is totally not us, but we need some balance in our lives.
We should probably listen to that.
Don't drink. Don't eat meat sticks.
Right.
Throw the chips away.
Exactly.
Basically, they sit on our show and then take notes of everything we're not supposed to be doing. That's
But we have an awesome guest this week. We are very excited to have in segment two. We're going to be joined again by Leo Borella, who's the CTO.
He actually wanted to come back.
Blue Shield of Michigan. We're going to be talking about corporate innovation in regards to IT and technology.
Yeah, let the record show, a CTO level guest
asked to come back.
Who asked to come back?
Like, wait, are you kidding? Like, we thought we'd never speak to us again. But Leo, appreciate you coming out again. Thank you for always great having you here. And then we're also joined by Kevin and Linda Green from Focus Hope. Talking about all the – there's a bunch of cool program stuff I didn't even know existed in the city of Detroit and the surrounding areas.
Well, and how many times do we have that conversation?
Yeah, exactly. Like there's program – like, you know, if you want it, you can go get it, and here's another place to go get it.
Where? Oh, well, here's another place you didn't know about. Where? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, hey, mark your calendars before we dive into stuff. March 10th is our twice a year – I can't say biannual because Dave makes fun of me – our twice a year pink slip party. If you've never been to a pink slip party, it is the un-job – we hate job fairs, so we created the pink slip party. So we're going to have DJ Nuri in the house spinning house. We're going to have special guests, the Ghostbusters, that are going to be hanging out, taking pictures. And, you know, the best part is there's going to be about 150 companies hiring managers, recruiters – hiring for more than probably 1,500 available jobs in the Metro Detroit area. Anything from L1 help desk to I don't know if there's any senior level, but there always is a couple floating.
A whole bunch of
PMs, developers, anything to do with IT, there's going to be someone there hiring. So we'll be taking over the Majestic Theater March 10th. Because we can't do it the week after because that's St. Patrick's Day.
Let's be clear, we usually run third Thursday is St. Patrick's Day. We are not running an event on St. Patrick's Day. That's just not going to happen.
So diving in real quick.
Well, and don't forget, we are going to be at Great Lakes Comic Con.
Oh, my God, that's right.
This year, well, the first half of this year is so overbooked for us, it's not even funny. The first con that we're hitting this year is going to be the Great Lakes Comic Con. It's at Macomb Community College, better known as, 12
Mile High.
Yeah. Yeah.
Famous alumni, right? Sitting right here in front of you. Proud alumni.
So we'll be there. We've got a booth. We'll be talking to folks. We'll be hanging out. We'll be live broadcasting. We'll be having a good time. And Bob, why are we there?
Sergeant Slaughter's in the house.
Because Sergeant Slaughter's going to be there.
Yeah, that's the only reason.
That's why we're going to be there.
That's not the only reason why.
Well, there's the Lion-O guy.
Oh, that's right. We want to get Lion-O to do a drop for the show from Thundercats.
And for the wrestler.
Right. So we've made it a habit on the show, 132 episodes in, to not talk politics because it's kind of stupid, and two, it alienates. But when it involves not renewing a domain name, it goes right in. But there, something came out and we thought it was fake. But if you went to JebBush.com, it got forward to DonaldJTrump.com.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because the Jeb Bush people forgot to renew their
domain.
GoDaddy domain.
It's got to be a part of, like, if you're a public figure, you've got a checklist, right? It's like, make sure my website's updated, make sure my Twitter is tended, make sure my domain name registrations happen in a timely basis.
Well, think about how many people they probably have. And if you switch web firms and who got that email, possibly, who's the domain registrar, you know? But it's almost, not many of us are big fans of Trump, but God, that's funny that he actually got
it's hilarious.
That he snagged the domain and pointed it to him.
It's us 101.
It totally is.
Jeb has done a bad job, though. There's JebBushForPresident.com is a blog about a gay couple. JebBushForPresident.net is basically used to oppose his record. So somebody wasn't thinking when they ran for president, basically.
He is, well, let's be clear, he is the one child left behind. That'll be the awkward Thanksgiving dinner when he's the one Bush kid who shows up without Secret Service.
Well, you know, Mom. And that's the thing with that's the thing when you're like a 60-year-old. We talk about like my dad. Every time I talk about technology and like a politician, I always relate it to my father because it's like I can't expect my dad to know like Twitter or what to do. So like here comes Donald Trump going, you know, Apple with this whole – we'll get into the FBI thing in a minute. But this whole Apple thing going, hey, we need to ban Apple sent from my iPhone.
As he tweets from his iPhone.
It's like do you not know that that gets stamped, Mr. Trump or whoever his staffer
Whoever's
was.
Managing your – social, kind of you know the whole Kanye. You know, it's possible he, you know, whoever you're paying to run your social media accounts, do better. That's all I ask. Do better.
You think someone would say like, yeah, ban Apple. Yeah, yes, Mr. Trump, we need to ban Apple as I'm typing in my
iPhone.
Wait a minute, it's going to say on the bottom, right. just do it. It's like, are you kidding me? So like you completely.
Oh, because that was screen capped and retweeted a bajillion times.
Even everyone. I don't care if you're a supporter or not. You're like, you dipshit. Like, come on. Give us all a break. But getting – so this conversation has been going on all week and it opens up a huge can of worms. If you're not familiar with the story, and Dave, I don't know how much deep you went into it, but it's the whole thing with the San Bernardino shooters, and the FBI basically wants Apple to open up a backdoor access to basically anything Apple, right? Exactly.
It's more than that, though. They want them basically to – they say, you have the technology. You can write software to do this for us. And that's basically what they're asking. And basically that software becomes like a skeleton key.
Just because you can – doesn't mean you should.
Well, I didn't know if you miss your password 10 times, it wipes it. Like
we talked about
how many drunk people have wiped their phones.
We've talked about this. I actually had a laptop that when I was waiting, so with the wacky mayhem ensued. Current laptop dead. Brought up old laptop. Sat down, tried to remember what password I had 3 years ago. As I had that old laptop. Did not remember that I had put the DoD encryption algorithm on that laptop. And so when I flaked the third time, it nuked itself.
I kind of love that, though. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on my phone I wouldn't want just like general people to be tweeting. So.
Yeah, exactly. But it was like one of those, I'm a genius, but I'm a moron.
Oh, trust me. Mary, I thought I lost my terabyte hard drive that's got all my things. Ooh. Like every backup from every company I've ever worked
Years
for.
Years of bad polka music.
All of it.
Wait, all the backups from what?
All the things.
All the things you're not supposed to have.
Right.
All my PST files from every company.
For for archival and retention purposes only.
Only. Right.
It's even worse though. I think the feds actually made it worse because the phone was backing itself up to iCloud like phones usually do.
Right.
But then the feds told the San Bernardino folks to change the password. All of a sudden breaking the iCloud link. So even if the phone would have automatically updated its backup,
it wouldn't have been able to.
Exactly. So they couldn't get it.
And you'd have tipped off the people that you're trying to get the information from.
Yeah, it's
that
bad.
They are getting into your information.
And they say this is not to set a precedence, but yes, you're setting a precedence by doing this.
Well, my
kind of the legal definition of the first time you do something is called setting a precedent.
Well, it's interesting, though. Apple has done this for 70 other phones. This came out this week. NPR said that 70 other phones have been broken by Apple.
And yet they wouldn't let the little old lady in Massachusetts get access to her dead husband's iPad.
That's so bad.
Yeah. Apple.
But again, though, can't you just do a warrant and then open the phone?
No.
But they're asking for more than that. They're asking for the software to automatically do it, which probably already exists on the dark web.
Right.
I'm sure it does. And then two of our favorite topics hit the news hard this week.
Is one Yelp?
Yes.
Oh, is one Yelp?
And the other one's Uber.
Because we love Yelp.
We do.
Which path of destruction do you want to go first? Yelp
you know,
or Uber?
Here's the thing.
I'll let you pick.
No, because we just had, you know, IT and the D has a Yelp page. I don't know why, because it's just this show. But we had
I created it before we launched the network.
I get that. But what's interesting is we had a bad review, and it was kind of funny that I'm reading this thing from Yelp that somebody that owns a pet sitting business is suing someone for leaving a bad review for like $6,000
for like $6,700, yes.
Right.
Because apparently in the agreement that they signed when they were going to drop their pets off, there was a non-disparagement clause. that basically said, no matter what happens, you will not go on Yelp, Foursquare, wherever, Facebook, and leave them a bad review.
If you need a pet sitter, are you really going to look on Yelp? And if someone leaves a bad review, are you really going to not have the person pet sit your
maybe.
Pet? For crying
yes.
out loud, maybe.
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
What if it's someone, kid from the neighborhood, and you're going to not – come on.
But what next? You're going to walk into like Imperial in Ferndale. There's going to be a big sign. By eating here, you agree to the terms and conditions, not to say that our tacos suck.
Right.
Yelp. I mean, where does that go? I mean, it's like the whole premise of free speech and reviews – and fair and honest feedback isn't the issue. That's the
well, that's what, they, that's what they basically said is that, you know, those – like any condition like that about a non-disparagement clause is basically inhibiting free speech.
It's illegal in California.
Yeah.
Maybe one day the rest of the country.
I like going to places that have the worst reviews. I think those are the best places.
Especially when it comes to bars. I mean, geez.
Oh, my God. The place me and Dave found out in Westland.
There are badges on Yelp for checking into places with bad reviews.
Oh.
I live for that.
That was, what was a place called that we went to that was,
oh,
it was great.
Poppers, Peppers.
Whatever.
Pepper,
yeah. It was a phenomenal place. And it had the worst reviews you could imagine on Yelp. And
because there was a Yelp event one night, and my goal – I said I'm going to find the closest bar within like a 10-mile radius to there – that has the worst Yelp reviews, and that's where we're going beforehand. And because, well, it's us. And that's where we went, and I'm like, dude, I'm not going to lie. Based on these reviews, we might not make it to the Yelp event. We may die. And then we walked in, and it was like the quintessential awesome corner dive bar with the old guys sitting at the end talking about, you know, what's going on in Detroit and politics and Trump sucks and this, that, and the other.
Fried food.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, shots of whiskey. It was a great bar.
Exactly.
But speaking of Yelp, here, this is the one that kind of irked me. Basically, a Yelp employee out of San Francisco, which was on the help desk. It was from one of the acquisition companies. What is it? Eat24.
Right.
Basically said, hey, I can't eat. Because after I pay rent in San Francisco, after what you pay me, I don't know what to do anymore.
You took a customer service
right.
help desk job.
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco. What were you expecting?
Well, the worst part is since she went public with it, which was probably the worst thing to do instead of just talking to someone.
And fired.
And you're fired, right?
So like, was it an hour? I think it was 2 hours
yeah.
after she posted the blog post.
But like she was doing the math, and it's like we pay Jess more here.
Yeah,
and it's like they're in like San Francisco.
Yeah, she makes the equivalent of $8 an hour and pays 80% of her of what she takes home in rent.
$12.50 for an apartment 40 miles away from work.
So they told her basically that, yeah. So she's they're trying to do workarounds, and you know had to find access to a train, and it's basically $11 round trip a day. So that's $50 a week, and if you look at think about it. She's making $700 every 2 weeks, and her rent was $1,200.
Why do you live in San Francisco at that point?
That's what I said. Go move to Minnesota. There's articles coming out, Business Insider, going, move to Minnesota.
How about Detroit?
Or how about Detroit? Right.
Hey, why not Zoidberg?
Like, she basically has to go – she's living off rice and basically going upstairs
well,
and,
but,
like,
and it's,
stealing
and it's
the corporate
this,
kitchen.
Right. Well, and it is. I mean, and it's the same argument – it's the same discussion and argument that we've had every time that, like, the whole – Walmart, living wage, all that stuff comes up. If people would stop taking those jobs, it's the law of supply and demand. If those jobs aren't getting filled, they have to raise the wage. Therefore, that's how that works. The whole artificially trying to inflate a wage is not the way to go about it.
But I also think I'm not, you know, 8.15 is like high school kid flipping burger money.
Right.
It is
it shouldn't
corporate.
Be with a degree.
Right. You're a corporation. You're
yeah.
a major corporation. You're a brand. And I'm not – trust me, I'm not on this whole $15 like,
well, no,
minimum
but
wage
so,
thing.
So 18
but I'm
bucks,
also like
– $18 an hour is what? 36 a year salary?
Yeah.
Something like – yeah.
Yeah.
Which is – that's start – you think that's level one starting wage.
Right. But you live in San Francisco. It does – how many times have we had that talk? Like, yeah, I'll talk to a company in California that wants to hire me. Assuming they're talking 3x what I'm making right now.
That's remember, I was supposed to go. They offered me the
yeah.
vice president job and go to New York.
Well,
I was going to be top of the News Corp building, corner office looking at Statue of Liberty. I mean, how cool
yeah.
is that? Oh, you're going to get a 30K raise. Like,
yeah,
you know.
No.
I took
yeah.
a pay cut to go to Google by like 10K a year.
Right.
Like, because it's Google. I can totally do cool things. And then I'm living in a shitty apartment on the Caltrain for $1,000 a month with two other people. And basically that's where your money goes in California.
But honestly, though, if you're if you got to like a if you have to dress up to go to work, Like you should.
If your job does not include a name tag.
Right. You should make more than – I mean, dude, I worked at Little Caesars. I worked at grocery stores, right?
Right.
We all did. But, like, I didn't go into a corporate office and make $8.
Nope.
You know, it's like, come on. Like, whatever you're doing, Yelp. I mean, I don't even care who it is. They can't be the only ones.
No, I'm sure they're not. I mean, how many startups are out there trying to lean bleed their way through until the next round
entice
of funding?
With equity.
Yeah. Right.
Think about all the startups. Think about all the people supporting those startups, like the janitors, the food
right.
service people, all of them making shit wages.
Craziness.
But you know, if you're interested, Yelp is currently looking for a Detroit city ambassador.
What is that? I don't even know what that means.
I wasn't really sure either. I'm not going to lie. I read the description twice.
So what happened to Annette? Is she still
there? No, she's still there.
She's still there. She's looking for assistant, more or less.
Exactly. Nice. So it's the mini Annette.
There will never be a mini Annette.
Well, because Annette's in Ann Arbor, so yeah, it is what it is. They want someone in the Detroit area to, like, you know, I don't know, I hate this word, but curate events.
Oh, God. Don't ever say that again.
Are they going to come to the pink slip party?
No.
Okay. Right.
No, we don't know. No, they're not IT. We don't know. But no, so I mean, that's yeah, but I mean, it's out there. You know, if someone's looking for a little, what was it, $11 an hour, $15 an hour?
Yeah. Yeah, 11.
Yeah.
So, Nuri, you shot over an interesting article that's very discussion worthy. And we always talk about, like, the Microsoft people that call the house, right?
But
and take over the.
But we didn't get to Uber. That was part
two. We'll
talk
about Uber. I wanted to talk about the hacker.
We're making a shit sandwich here.
Yeah, totally. We can.
We have the perfect storm.
But now, Dave, Jesus, Dave. basically, with the Microsoft thing calling the house and they say, "Hey, we're going to take your computer hostage and give me $400." They kind of
we're tech support. Go to this website and let us. Yeah,
right. Well, they kind of anteed up and took over a hospital.
Yeah, it was a hospital in Hollywood, California.
Yeah.
Basically, the encrypting virus got loose in the network, and they were asking for $3.6 million in bitcoins. They basically encrypted all their EMR, their patient records. They're basically resorting to fax machines at this point to send information back and forth in this hospital. And I guess the way they got in was this new variant of the CryptoLocker virus, which comes as a Microsoft Word document.
Uh-huh.
Basically, you get a Microsoft Word document.
And if you're silly enough to say yes, go ahead and enable macros.
Right.
Wah, wah.
Well, it says it's like a bunch of garbage, and it says, if you can't read this, it's because your macros are disabled. Click the button up there. And then all of a sudden it downloads the cryptovirus and you're done. So if you're at home and you get an email attachment, if you're at work, you get an email attachment.
Once again, if you get an attachment from someone you don't know, don't click it for the love of God.
And if you're a freaking domain administrator, don't log in as your DA account to do all that work from.
Do you guys get fake emails from your work when they're doing social testing?
I think, yeah, totally.
I get them all the time and I can spot them a mile away. It'll like to open this and like it's very – like
shoddily made Cisco webpage.
Totally, yeah. And it's like, I know better than to open this crap. But I mean, but then again, what about the person at the front desk making $8.15 an hour? You know, they don't know.
Huh?
And you're holding them hostage for what, 3.6 million?
$3.6 million.
Yeah. But, you know, I think who's having the worst week, and Dave, you alluded to it earlier, was our friends at Uber.
They're always having a bad week. But, I mean, this one in particular, number one, so Uber settled a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit. So if you've taken an Uber ride anywhere between 2013 and 2016, odds are good Uber owes you money. We're waiting for the URL to come out for that settlement website. But so it was the whole thing about the background checks and all that stuff. And now they're not calling it a safe ride fee. Now it's a service fee or something like that. But yeah, so for those not here in the area that didn't catch it on the news – Uber driver out in Kalamazoo went batshit crazy. It's the only way to put it. The other day, and started killing people, shooting people
in between
his Uber fares.
Pick up a riot driver, and someone actually made the joke like, "Are you the shooter?"
The last fare he had that dropped him off at the hotel where the cops were waiting. One of the places the cops were looking for him. Made the crack, hey, you're not the killer, are you? Because, I mean, it was already out on the news. And
totally something I would say if that was going on.
Right. So, yeah, both of us would.
You look covered in blood.
Right. Like, oh. But, I mean, it just – yeah. And so this whole debate has gone on about, you know, Uber and their practices and their background checks and all that stuff. And, we've both gotten into multiple arguments on Facebook on this over the course of the past day. Everybody wants to hammer on Uber about this. You can't control crazy. When crazy just happens in someone, that's not Uber's responsibility.
Well, who started it? Well, that was the old Go Postal, because all the stuff that happened at the post office.
Right.
Can you blame the post office? You know, and again, can you blame Uber? And, you know, we joked, we did it today in the waiting room, talking about how the legal defense for Uber is the same as a pimp. There's absolutely zero difference.
Yeah, exactly. They just put two consenting adults together and they exchange money. They take a percentage off the top. Whatever happens after that is between those two consenting adults.
Right.
And that's Uber's whole model is, you know, I mean, that they've classified everyone as independent contractors. The state of California has the ruling that says, no, they're employees, but that's under appeal and all that stuff. Dude, how do you run an international company that has to run as fast and loose as Uber does without having – it's the law of averages.
And not doing background checks.
Well, they do background checks.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean this guy passed their background checks. He was like
– he had zero criminal
history.
He
was Stan the family man. Quiet guy, mostly kept to himself. This guy was like totally normal and just snapped. There's no test for snap. Or about to snap.
Well, and they
it just happens.
And that's the thing with them being independent contractors. It's not like they have a boss. They don't talk. How you feeling today, buddy? Like you're not talking to anybody.
Right.
You're on your own.
Why is Uber the one mentioned in the news? Right? Why isn't it like if it was a Meijer employee, it would be Meijer employee kills everybody today. Or if it was like gas station employee, it would be Chevron employee kills everybody
right.
today. No, it's this like Uber mentality we're getting.
Well,
into.
But again, it's the law of averages. You know, Uber, they've got hundreds of thousands of drivers. The law of averages says, yeah, come. And there is that website that's out there, whosdrivingyou.org.
Run by the Taxi and Limousine Commission.
Which is run by the Taxi and Limousine Commission, full disclosure. But all they do is provide links to articles about, you know, different things that have gone on with Uber and Lyft drivers. It's almost like the news in general. If you sit down and take it at face value, it's frightening and freaky. But if you recognize it for what it is, that it's the, you know, okay, yeah, there were three news stories last week that had to do with Uber and Lyft driver out of a percentile, you know, out of what, 400,000 drivers combined that they have. What's that percentage rate? You know, how many people get in car accidents, have road rage incidents every day, you know, just around Metro Detroit with a far greater percentage rate?
You know, if you look at list of crimes committed by taxi drivers, an article pops up from Kansas.com that says 1 in 10 Wichita cab drivers has a felony record. I mean, you're getting into a car run by somebody else, whether it's an Uber,
right.
whether it's a taxi. I think there's nothing that's going to take that bit of risk away, no matter how hard they try.
Right. No matter how many Criminal Minds episodes are out there.
Clink, clink.
That's Law and Order. Chung, chung.
And I think we'll end this. It's like I always loved a good troll story. But sometimes I think you can just take it a little bit too far. And the worst story.
Oh, is this the Facebook girl?
This is the worst story I've read all year.
This poor woman, mother of God.
She had to, I don't know, what she basically said she didn't. A story went viral. She got tagged into a post on Facebook and it went completely viral and basically said she's a 37-year-old.
No. Someone took the picture
right.
she posted on her Facebook page
yeah.
and attached that into a story.
Right, which basically said that she had 14 kids from 14 different men, and that story went viral. And it's her story with her only child, with her husband, that she's
yes.
been
– like, a birth of their first kid – happiest moment of her life, and now she's social media that girl for this week.
Right. And apparently she's 22. The article said she's 37.
Right.
And this thing went literally viral. So now she's getting hate mail.
Oh, how many times? I saw it at least 8 times in my feed last week.
Right.
Somebody that stole her picture, like, this is a good stock photo. Look at this. It's a woman with a baby. How did
– Well, that's like part of what she's going through. It's like who – like they're asking like who hates you enough – to make up this story around your photo.
It was a real story, but the photo was bad? Or was it a made-up story and a made-up photo?
Made-up story.
Made-up story, wow. Real photo.
It was her first child's birth photo.
Dude, that shit.
And then somebody went and said, hey, this chick's got four, just gave birth to her 14th child in 14 men. And it went, everyone picked it up. And no one fact-checked it. And here's this poor girl, my life's for everyone.
Because it's the internet and who fact checks.
Do you guys want to do that like next week? You know, have a bunch of drinks, sit around and make some faked up stories and see how far they go? Or is this what you guys always do?
No, because then we'd be douche line and we don't do that.
Zing. But hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with Leo Barella. This is the IT in the D show and we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland. Secret Life of the American Teenager and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh, yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D show.
Welcome back, episode 132. This is the IT in the D show, the number 1, 2, and 3 ranked technology podcast on SoundCloud this week. find us online, itinthed.com. Shout out to Randy and Ian in the Twitter sphere. Give us a follow and give us a like on the Facebook and give us a review. If you don't mind, we would appreciate it on iTunes. We have 57 and it's held strong there for like 2 weeks.
We're good there.
Yeah.
We need more though.
But absolutely, we always need more. Mark your calendars, March 10th, our twice-a-year pink slip party down at the Majestic Theater, Detroit. About 100 to 150 hiring managers looking for about 2,000 jobs locally in IT. It is the job fair to end all job fairs because the other ones suck and ours does not.
Well, yeah.
Exactly. And then also this weekend we're going to be at the the Great Lakes Comic-Con over at Macomb College. On 12 Mile, so check us out. Say hi to Sergeant Slaughter, and we should be
some of the
fun.
Shows there with us. It should be a good day.
Absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, as a repeat offender, we got the note that says Leo wants to come back on the show. We're like, he wants to come back. But we really appreciate having you out, Leo Barella, the CTO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. Appreciate you coming out again.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Yeah,
love being here.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Put up with our
We're stunned by that.
Yeah, exactly.
We're good with it, but we're stunned by that. So, Leo, like we had talked, you know, so last time we kind of talked about, you know, the state of healthcare IT.
Yep.
So we kind of wanted to pick your brain a little bit just about not necessarily healthcare specific, but like innovation in general. Like when it comes to the IT space or companies, like what do you see going on that strikes you as innovative? Because you've got a different view. Bob's kind of in the sales trenches. I'm in the day-to-day trenches of dealing with nonsense. What hits you as in that innovative space?
Yeah, so I feel that lately companies are transforming to become IT companies, most companies. So pick any company that basically had a service before and they were actually focusing on their service and then eventually they were reaching into IT and say, hey, you know, maybe I actually need some IT guys to kind of help me out and actually sell my stuff. But now, in order to succeed, you almost need to actually start with a technology company mentality and then eventually think about the service that you actually want to sell on it. And the most successful companies now really have like an entry point on technology that is unparalleled compared to where we were, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Like
in our business of healthcare, you must have a data center because you need to actually store a ton of data. You must actually have, you know, information protection, and so you need to spend a ton of money there. But now you can actually go out and actually buy that same thing on, you know, I'm not going to mention any companies, but
it's the Kmart versus Walmart. You know, that argument where, why does Walmart have such a leg up over Kmart? I mean, yeah, you know, okay, Walton family money and all that stuff. But a big chunk of that is that, okay, so Kmart's been around for 100-plus years. They have legacy infrastructure. They're still running on big iron. They're still running on, you know, IMS and KIC systems and all that stuff. Walmart sprang into the world of relational databases and had that as their starting point. That's a huge differentiation.
Yeah, I think that when you're actually looking at large corporations, it's really hard for a large corporation to kind of really adapt to that type of mentality, mostly because of the fact that, you know, they've been around for 30, 45, 50, 60 years, right? And so they're kind of used at making money a certain way. And the thought of actually switching your operating model, especially around IT, it's difficult, and it's, you know, you cannot believe that basically you can run your business at a tenth or a hundredth of the cost, just because of the fact that it seems that it's unreliable. Like, many companies are struggling in actually trying to adopt like Hadoop for,
right,
for analytics, when Hadoop is basically a much better platform than possibly, you know, most of the relational database companies that are out there. And you can actually run some serious analytics independently of what you're trying to analyze, right? So basically you don't have to – the technology really does not define the service. You know, the technology supports the service. And I think that, you know, innovation really starts when companies can break through that the level of comfort, where basically you're no longer talking to the – you know, again, I'm not going to mention any company names, but you're not talking to the largest, you know, database companies. You're not talking about open source. And now you can actually run analytics on open source at a hundredth of the cost.
Sure. I mean, you know, I being in the technology space, you look at companies like that I belong, like EMC and Cisco and Microsoft and HP, they're trying to redefine. They were hardware companies. Now they want to be software companies. They want to implore annuity models.
Or X as a service.
Or exactly. Yeah. X as a service, exactly. Now you have no. It's got to be much more difficult for, let's say, an OEM or an automotive manufacturer, or someone in that space, to say, okay, we're going to kind of switch, or, you know, how does a company like that innovate? Technology company, it's a little bit easier, right, because they have that basis. Yeah. But what about a company that has its roots as like just a traditional old school company?
Yeah. So, you know, one component of innovation is also driven by the consumers themselves. You know, consumerism is really driving what, you know, and how actually services are sold. And specifically, even like in our industry, we're late at adopting newer technologies, and we're late at adopting techniques that basically other organizations have already used. Like, you know, if you're actually looking at retail, if you're looking at banking, everything is on the phone, you know, and basically the phone defines the service, and people actually choose services based on how the iPhone app or the Android app, you know, looks like.
Well, that's actually one of the stories we didn't get to in the first segment, and I kind of wanted to get your take on this. They're rolling out a new basically test set of ATMs that will use your phone instead of an ATM card.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Because it kind of tweaks me out a little bit.
No, so, you know, for instance, you know, I'm definitely thrilled with the fact that you can actually use your fingerprint as your signature. And again, I haven't heard stories yet of people being able to actually break through the, you know, through the crypto of actually stealing my fingerprint.
Yeah, but am I the only one that ever saw Demolition Man?
Or Spaceballs,
yeah. Right? And take the guy's, guy's eyeball out. And
I think it's actually more secure than a plastic card. You know, today, you know, practically.
Even with the chip, yeah.
Even with the chip, exactly. So as a matter of fact, you know, the chip is still, I mean, the chip has been around in Europe for the past, you know, 20, 25 years.
Well, right? And it's only good for point of sale.
Yeah, exactly. So while with the phone, I think that your accessibility is pretty much, you know, anywhere. And, you know, I remember like about 15, 20 years ago, even when the first Bluetooth telephones actually came around, what is it, 15 years ago.
Right.
So, that people were already talking about using Bluetooth, and the fact that basically you have a MAC address on your phone that you can actually use to transact as being yours through the contract and actually using the phone company to make a payment, right? So these are all, you know, type of innovations that again, never really caught at the time because of the fact that it didn't seem right to actually just pay with your phone. But now that we actually have multiple antennas on the phone and, you know, proximity sensors.
Well, and Apple Pay and Samsung Pay. Exactly. Walmart Pay.
Well, and how much of this is being, like, I don't know if it's a good question or bad question, but how much of this is being pulled by the consumer and how much is being pushed by the companies that are trying to do the innovation?
No, I think it's actually more of a pull from the consumer. And I think the consumer, once basically the consumer starts using the app for one application, then basically companies that are trying to be innovative are able to copy, right, a certain type of advancement or you know, disruptor in a specific industry and then adopt it. I mean, Apple what was it, Steve Jobs that was actually saying, you know, good artists actually steal rather than, than actually making, so you don't have to really be the inventor, right?
Quite right.
Still angry.
you don't have to be the inventor to be able to actually breakthrough, as a matter of fact.
Bob just discovered this week that Quiet Riot was really nothing more than a cover band.
Yeah, there you go.
That got really successful off someone else's songs, and he was horrified.
Yeah, and and inventors usually are not the ones that are actually really breaking through the market. Like the Alta, I think it was actually the computer that Xerox actually made as Xerox PARC, and then Jobs walked through, saw something and said, "Well, I'm gonna make." Billions of dollars.
Well, Microsoft with the mouse.
If
you ask anyone who invented the car, who's going to say Benz?
Right.
Right?
No, yeah.
Right. Not many.
No, exactly. So, and I guess that, the process of innovation, if you're actually looking at the first Fortune 500 companies, 1955, I think, is actually when that count actually really started, and 82% of them are gone. 82 or 88% of them are gone. And not because of the fact that they were not innovators, because at some point in time, they were actually able to innovate and actually create a market that basically made them lead, and be in the top 500. But then somehow, they basically lost their mojo. And someone else actually became
Sony with
the disruptor, right?
The best, I keep coming back to Sony and MP3.
Yeah.
Sony owned portable music in the 80s and early 90s, where there was the Walkman, the Discman, whoever else. Whatever other platform they had, they refused to accept that the MP3 was going to be the new digital music format. Gone.
Yeah, it was the same with Kodak, right?
Yeah.
So Kodak actually owned the patent for digital photography. And but the fact is that the people that were actually looking at the invention and, they were making too much money on film to really want to invest in an area that basically was completely foreign to their core product.
Look at HP right now. They're one of their biggest profit center is ink.
Yeah, there
right after services. That's their number two profit center. Do you think for a second they want to innovate and change how printing is done? Hell no.
No, exactly.
Right.
I remember John Chambers had a quote a couple years ago. He said that, 40% of companies wouldn't exist in 10 years? Basically just because how quickly technology changes.
Of course.
How fast the market's going.
So what's your – we've been talking for the last couple of weeks, the bubble – that's starting to burst with these LinkedIns and the Yahoos.
Yeah, where the stock prices are starting to plummet as
they had these massive valuations, and now they're realizing there isn't much there.
No, exactly. That was actually from the beginning of time. I think it was I was actually working at Microsoft at the time, and I think Steve Ballmer actually went public on the stock exchange saying that I really don't understand exactly what this technology bubble is about, because obviously, there is nothing there. I'm talking about 15 years ago, 15 years ago, right?
But you look at Airbnb right now. What's their latest valuation? Is it close to $100 billion?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what do you do? You're an app.
But Beyonce used it.
I don't care. But at the end of the day, it's an app.
No, exactly. But the whole theory of the stock market, of course, is not.
Right.
Yeah.
The speculation stock market is collectibles 101.
Exactly.
You have something and it's worth whatever somebody's willing to pay for it.
That's correct.
And you have American Axle down the street going, "We make stuff. Why aren't we?" For crying out loud. I'm just saying.
Yeah. We actually make a physical thing you can put your hands on.
Right.
As part of innovation, what do you think about the push to cloud? I see so many companies making radical changes in their cloud strategy. As far as some companies are like, "I don't want a data center of my own in 2 or 3 years."
Yeah.
Is that a fad? Is that here to stay? Different from a healthcare.
I think it's definitely here to stay. I think the companies that are starting now probably would never think about building a data center, unless you really have some top secret information that you need to store. Like in our case, of course, we have health records of our members, we want to be able to have our own level of protection on the data. But if you're actually looking,
you're telling people not to open Microsoft Word documents from
let's actually look at new entrants. Like I don't know if you actually have heard of Oscar Health.
Yep,
Oscar is a company that basically started out in New York City, and they don't have anything of their own. So basically they're piecing together services from different companies that offer, some actually offer payroll, and some of them actually are offering wellness and care management services. Some of them offer payments, and then they put it together into, and it's all cloud. They don't own any infrastructure. right? And basically that they're out there selling to people the same level of service that a traditional and basically a company like Blue Cross, you know, basically can sell. So basically to the naked eye, when they're actually looking at the Oscar Health site or the Blue Cross Blue Shield site, to them it's, you know, it's basically an insurance company, and one actually prices lower than the other. And if price point is actually what you want to experience, and then actually you go for one versus the other. So,
but I mean, isn't that like, I mean, that's almost internet 101 though. Yeah. You know, there's always been, you know, from the very beginning, the, you know, you look at what Yahoo was back mm-hmm. in the day. They were essentially a directory, mm-hmm. you know, which was the advent of the content aggregators. And that's kind of what we're seeing now is it's not, we had the rise and now the fall of the content aggregators. Mm-hmm. And now we're looking at the rise of the service aggregators is what it kind of seems like.
Well, Dave, if you look at like being in my world, this my you know starting and being in data center my whole life,
right?
When Amazon launched cloud, we're like, oh, it's cute,
uh-huh.
Aw. And then all of a sudden, like,
our business customers are buying that.
They're doing how much in business now? They basically took that cloud market by no one knows how. But then again. They offered a service model that mm-hmm. was priced, you know, again, they changed the game. So,
and then if you're actually looking at scalability and cloud, I mean, it's so easy to actually just extend your data center to become global rather than actually doing it brick and mortar, you know, basically, I mean, you need to actually apply for permits. And
I click four boxes on done. The AWS server and
I've got – You don't care about rack units. You don't care about HVAC. You basically,
no, exactly.
Yeah, I don't need to worry about air conditioning. Yeah. I don't need to worry about, like, you know, fire suppression. I just click boxes and good.
And especially if IT is not your business, then why would you want to actually run an IT business within your company, right? So it's I think it's you know, it's a very interesting dynamic that is going to really, you know, be applied across industries. But if you're starting your own company today, I don't know if you want to actually just really build your own data center. You know,
basically, if you're a tech person looking to get into IT, probably some cloud certifications from Amazon are probably a pretty good place to start too.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, you know, when we actually do acquisitions, and I'm not specifically talking about Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, right. but in general, you know, in other companies that I worked at, we were actually buying companies because they basically had a specific service that we wanted to actually acquire. And if you're actually looking at their valuation or what they physically had, it was basically no assets. Everything was actually built on Amazon, and all that we were actually just acquiring was the license to the software, and then we would take that software and bring it inside of our own data center, right, because of the fact that we have certain policies.
So the inevitable question, so where's the H-bomb in all this? So, I mean, innovation is great. Innovation is awesome. But innovation unchecked leads to questionable consequences.
Well, so a couple of things. I guess that one of the laws of innovation is really that fail fast approach. And you don't wait until you have a finished product before you ship. You know, so you if you want to innovate, you must, you know, take the risk of failure.
Right.
Now, again, and I'm not sure exactly what failure you were actually trying to address or point to, but I think that if you don't have that ability to risk, then it's really going to be hard to innovate. I feel that if you're actually looking at any sort, like even actually talking about Uber, right? They're deregulating an industry that it's highly, I'm not sure exactly. It's regulated by not only the laws, but people that basically work for the taxi business to actually run a certain way.
Well, and it varies city by city, country by country.
Right. So basically there is the risk of, hey, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to put up an app up there and see if actually drivers come along and, you know, I can actually establish the service. And then, of course, you know, they actually go through the motions of, you know, legal and, you know, even scare tactics of, you know, of service. And so I think it's actually part of the innovation itself, right? So basically you're changing a culture, you're changing a trend. If you're an innovator, you don't actually think of doing an incremental improvement to a product or, you know, or a service. You think of the next level.
Break
right?
and do over. Yeah.
No, exactly. So you kind of need to be ready to actually make the jump to the next level.
So how difficult is it for these, you know, some, especially in Michigan, when you have old companies, you know, they always use the old saying, you know, turning the Titanic around.
Yes. So, yeah. And honestly, innovation is extremely difficult when you're actually within an organization that has been settling or settled for a very long period of time, mostly because of the fact that, of course, the executives that basically make decisions within a company that is very, very well established are very much comfortable with how businesses run. And unless there is an evidence that basically the business is not doing well, then basically you don't want to innovate, right? So it's really hard to actually create a culture of innovation within the company. Most companies that are basically successful in innovating, especially like in the pharma industry, you actually see it all the time, where basically pharma is actually producing new drugs. You must spin off almost the company from the corporate culture, because you know that if you actually keep it inside of your company, then
you'll choke it.
You choke it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and the hardest part about innovation is when you actually have the innovative idea and you're trying to actually make it germinate, if you actually swing it back into the regular corporate culture and processes, you'll never get funded. And if you do get funded, then basically you get assigned to a team that basically runs the same way that, you know, any other team has ever run. And the end product, it's always going to be something that is not going to be acceptable, or it's not even going to, it's not even close to what the original idea of innovation was, right?
Well, and I mean, like, that's the hard part. I mean, there aren't too many companies out here that don't have, you know, a Skunk Works, you know, an R&D lab, you know, whatever you want to call it, where they're trying to figure out, all right, what's coming 3, 5, you know, 10 years down the road, that kind of stuff. The challenge that I found with almost all of them is that they're all still applying current state thinking to a future state model, which, as you were just saying, is kind of doomed to fail. You're by nature inhibiting yourself. So, like, how does a company break that mindset?
Yeah, so I think it is actually by adapting processes that are different than the regular ones. So, especially like in the funding model. And the process of actually selecting, I mean, we all work for corporate companies, right? There is the classic, you know, budgeting process where basically, you know, at the beginning, you know, 3, 4 months before the beginning of the year, you put up the list of projects you're going to go do next year. And then there is the classic above the line, below the line, right? So, innovation really never comes above the line, because you need to take care of everything else, and whatever the new idea is so far from the reach of the executives that should or will approve actually this new innovation that basically it never actually gets funded. So the way that you know to approach it is, of course, at least for companies that have been successful in innovating, is, you know, one, what I was actually saying before, you actually have like a separate entity of the company that basically just runs innovation. Or second, you actually introduce a process by which basically you make a definitive statement that basically if I have a budget of X, then I will actually dedicate this specific funding to innovation. And then you kind of, you know, need to create a process by which you funnel all the ideas that you've generated through either employees or, you know, your partners or whatever, you through this new process. And even actually the process of innovation itself, it's not like the classic, you know, waterfall approach. You must actually have a fail fast, agile, iterative type of execution, but if you actually try to apply again the process and laws of, you know, of the regular company, then basically you fail.
Yeah. No, true.
Interesting.
We could have this talk all night.
I know, right? it's totally with my will. Yeah, I could talk about this for days. But hey, we're going to bounce up against a quick break. If you don't mind, we're going to bring it back and forth for a segment. And we'll be back with the folks from from Focus Hope locally here in Detroit. And Dave, if you're ready, this is the IT and the D Show, and we'll be right back.
IT and the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit. One beer at a time.
Hi, I'm Brittany Daniel from The Game, and you're listening to IT and the D Show.
ITintheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening. This is the IT and the D Show, the number one ranked and 2 and 3 ranked technology podcast at SoundCloud this week. We're at episode 132, hanging out here in Podcast Detroit. This is Bob, the sales guy, always hanging out with Dave the Geek, Nuri, the FNG, Find us online, itinthed.com, and our schedule's posted and all of our fun stuff. Mark your calendars. March 10th, the Pink Slip Party.
Yep.
And then we're going to be at the Great Lakes Comic Con this weekend, and basically our summer's screwed. We're booked solid every weekend.
Our wives and families are going to hate us by June.
Like, when do we – let's go on family vacation, Bob. Where do we go? I don't know. Let me ask Dave what the heck we're signing up for all year.
Let's go to the Great Lakes Comic Con.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to check our con schedule to find out when we can go on vacation.
True story, yeah. I know. And wrestling. I can't miss wrestling.
Oh, yeah, between cons and wrestling and this and events and we're –
wouldn't have it any other way.
No, that's the fun part.
Exactly. But hey, we are joined by Dave, actually, some friends of Dave's. We got Kevin and Linda Green here from, is it Operation Focus Hope or just Focus Hope? It's
Focus Hope.
Good. Well, this is, you guys are doing the American.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, the American Apprenticeship Program. And we talk to people all the time and saying, well, what can we do? Who's hiring? What can we do to break in? And it seems like you guys have that answer.
Well, we don't have the answer to hiring just yet.
Or training.
People in this room can help us with that, but we do have the answer to training. And the American Apprenticeship Initiative is a $100 million national program that's funded by H-1B fees. Visa fees.
See, now that, hold on, I want to stop on that because Dave told me about this earlier, and we heard about this. It's like, wait, so this thing, so when they collect money for H-1B visas, everybody thinks that's just like house money, right? That's going to pay golf course fees. This is actually funding training for people that are here.
That are here so that we can have American workers.
How cool is that?
Some of the skills that workers that come to the country with. So Focus Hope is in on this. We're helping to build up network support technicians, and our students learn how to configure and support PCs, and they do Windows operating systems and implement troubleshooting networks. They configure routers and switches, and they set up VLANs, maintaining computers and network access.
Bob, what's a VLAN?
Ah, stop. Never asked that. Change my... No, so I'm looking at, so it's not just training, they're actually apprenticeship programs. So walk me through, like, after you get the training done, who takes on the apprenticeship?
Well, the apprenticeship, there's actually a pre-apprenticeship program where the student gets, you know, the fundamental training of that he needs to go into, like, a Blue Cross Blue Shield or a AAA or a company like that. And we are looking for employers to support our trainees. The first 5 weeks of the course, they cover network fundamentals, including customer service, supporting and using the latest desktop and mobile operating systems, network connectivity and troubleshooting. They do desktop and mobile devices, and they earn their first certification in business and professional customer service examination. And then the course also includes network technology, and they're earning actually an MCSA in server administration, Windows 10, and also they're earning a Cisco certified entry network technician level certification.
So they are getting certs.
They are getting certs. They're stackable certs, and in fact, that was written into the grant, and that's one of the stipulations that the students will get stackable certs. And after the completion of the program at Focus Hope, then the student moves forward to an employer, and they're in that, and then they're in the apprenticeship training, and it qualifies students for advanced work, and they kind of move up the ladder of the technological things that they learn. And there's an additional 540 hours that are required along with on-the-job training. Students learn the fundamentals of network devices, concepts, protocols, and technologies. And again, so they earn the Microsoft certifications along with the Cisco certification.
Crazy.
So yet again, all the people that are out there whining that there's no path to an IT job.
Right.
Hi.
Staring you in the face.
This is great because, you know, you can go to school, you can get your certifications on your own, things like that. Then everyone asks us, you know, what's the next step? You know, how do I get a job? Because all the jobs say, we need someone with 2 years of experience. And
right.
You can't get experience unless you've got the job. So basically, people are walked into apprenticeships because of this program. And then they're also given ongoing stuff as well, right? To keep them
sharp. And kind of like we talked about before, I mean, when we were before the show, I mean, it's laughably, people don't think of the term apprenticeship when it comes to the IT industry.
Like electrician, maybe,
well,
plumber.
But that's really what happens. I mean, you know, so many people do, you know, they get out of school, they do their first 3 years at an EDS, at a help desk gig, at, you know, the path that we've published, where that's your apprentice. It really is an apprenticeship. You're learning on the job to make you a more valuable employee to then either go on within that company or to go on elsewhere and find another gig. It already exists. It just doesn't use that terminology.
Well, they kind of use the terminology of interns.
Right.
And so apprenticeship is a new phrase for it or a new term for it. But actually, as you said, it's the same path that the IT workers have been going along all along.
Right.
And so, as you say, they walk in the door with an employer wanting interested in them and wanting the type of skills that they'll be learning at Focus Hope and at WC3D. We were partners with them as well as other entities around the city. And so, and we also have the manufacturing track that Kevin will tell you about.
Hey, it's an exciting time at Focus Hope, and we do a lot of different things.
Well, you are a radio guy. I'm just going to drop that one right now.
thank you. I'm here. I'm on the radio now. this grant is going to allow us to expand what we do in terms of outreach efforts. The American Apprenticeship Initiative is a national initiative, and Focus Hope's American Apprenticeship Program is our own version of how this works. There are 46 grantees nationwide, 3 in the state of Michigan, and Focus Hope is the premier grantee in the Detroit area. We'll be training in areas of IT, but let's not forget manufacturing. This is a manufacturing hub. And one of the things we train in is CNC technology, computer numerical control. And this is going to allow an apprentice or a trainee to enter the manufacturing skill, take up some of that middle skills, those middle skill jobs. This training, it leads to good middle class jobs.
You know, I don't know about my entire family. Sorry, Dave. My entire family, toolmakers, all Germans.
Well, I was just saying,
this is right up my wheelhouse.
I can't speak for your side of town, but I mean, on the east side, there's not a street corner that doesn't have two pieces of metal with a piece of paper strung between them. You know, that's saying looking for, you know, CNC operators. Not a single one.
And so in this country at one time, there were apprenticeship programs everywhere. Every company, every major company had an apprenticeship program. And what we know is that those skilled workers are now ending the end of their working lives. They're retiring and moving to Florida and things like that that retirees do. And there's no replacement for them. This is going to allow for the next generation of skilled workers going forward. And those skilled workers will include IT. And we know there's IT in everything.
So let me ask you a question. I want to get in, right? I'm just thinking, so is there a line? Who takes precedence? Who gets signed up first? Is there any costs involved if I want to be involved or what?
Well, there are costs involved, but the beautiful thing about it is that because of this H-1B grant and how the fees are being used for this training, the cost is substantially less than it would be. So what we're able to do is use government dollars, and an employer can upskill their existing workers or hire new workers and train those and limit the employer's cost by using this grant. It's a great thing to do. Registered apprenticeships are a U.S. Department of Labor initiative, and this entire program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of Labor.
So, okay, that's an interesting point. It's not just people off the street that want to come in. So I'm an employer. I want to get my employees better trained and stuff. How do I go about doing that?
Well, the first thing you do, you would call Focus Hope, and that would be 313-494-4300. Once you call Focus Hope and you got into
See how I set that up for you?
Exactly. Once you call Focus Hope, we would put you on the path and put you in touch with the right kind of people. But the idea would be to interview that employer and or employee, find out exactly what they needed, and to draft an apprenticeship program that met those needs.
One of the great things about the Information Technology Center, as well as the Machinist Training Institute, is that Focus Hope is known for hands-on training. So you don't just get theory.
Always has been. We've been aware of you guys for a long, long time.
That's the major thing. So you don't just get theory and a bunch of book knowledge, which is very important, but you also get to work inside.
let's all be honest. No,
the hands-on experience that it takes to actually perform the job.
So, what about people? I mean, if someone's doing a career change, if they have never worked in an IT industry, what do you do for folks to help them kind of learn how to work in maybe corporate America or work in those IT service type jobs? Do you do anything for soft skills or training them how to be better employees?
By the time our students matriculate through all the classes, they actually have a certified business professional certification.
Can we pay to send people through that?
Because I'm kidding.
I've got like 8 off the top of my head that
we do have some entry requirements.
Soft skills and professional development training. One of the good things that Focus Hope does is psychology of success. So as you say, people who come in off the street thinking maybe I can't do it or I don't have the skills, it's skill building. It's confidence building. So those are some of the soft skills that they come along that you know, we train along with the IT and the machinist skills. Also, students are building their portfolio when they're earning those stackable certifications. So they're building a portfolio. We're teaching them how to write their resume. And they put on their resume all the things that they did, you know, in our classes with their hands-on skills.
So it's 2016. Everyone wants instant gratification. Everyone assumes they will launch something and immediately have a bajillion Twitter followers and a million people on Instagram and YouTube and da-da-da. How long does this class take?
Well, we have 2 training tracks that we're offering now, and there'll be a third coming along next year. The manufacturing training track lasts about 2 years. And the IT training track is a little less, about a year, a little more than a year. But
which makes sense. I mean, like I said, I mean, you know, your typical, I graduate, I go get a job at EDS or wherever else. It's about 3 years where you churn and burn and learn what you're going to do.
And these programs are competency based, and what that means is a trainee or an apprentice is going to be able to demonstrate a certain competence and be able to move along almost at their own pace. There are certain things that are built into the program, but competency-based is what we're really trying to go for here.
So you can kind of advance at your own pace, right.
I really like the fact that you're actually coming out with a cert because, you know, you talk about it all the time. You know, and here's the thing, you know, we talk about this all the time. We're never going to talk anyone out of going to college. But damn it, if you want to get an IT and jump, I mean, you know, when our
if you're sitting out there in your seventh semester of your English lit degree,
yeah,
you might want to reevaluate where you are in life.
That's right. Dave said it, not me. I'll throw that one out.
But no, I mean, we've said it a million times. I mean, it's not, my degrees are in biochem and theater arts. They have nothing to do with what I do day to day.
And I don't have one.
But you give me the choice between someone who, great, just got out with their 4-year shiny, happy piece of paper degree that says they know CIS versus someone who's been out in the field doing it 4 years. Guess which one I'm going to pick 10 times out of 10. It's not even an option. I've gotten into screaming matches with HR departments about this. This is that hands-on practical approach that this gives is what's missing in current curriculums, which I think is a phenomenal
thing. This is the way it used to be done.
Yeah.
This is the way the whole apprenticeship program, I think my father was in it for like 4 years. This is the way it was done.
Well, and like I said, I mean, like, you know, and for all intents and purposes, I did it. You know what? When I graduated, I had no intention of being a geek. I went and kind of wrangled my way into, you know, a help desk job, you know, and then went to a DBA. From there, became a sysadmin. I mean, it's that whole path of you learn, you pay your dues, and then you grow as you can grow is how it's supposed to work.
Well, you know, Focus Hope is a certification center, and we actually take people from all around, even internationally, come over to Focus Hope to take their certifications. We offer all of the Microsoft certifications, the A+ hardware and software certification. We are a Cisco Networking Academy. We do small office and home office. It's just an education hub for people who want that hands-on training certifications.
And out of the 6,000 people that are in our network, I bet not even 5% know that this exists, let alone the people outside the network.
Well, so and candidly, I mean, I'm just thinking all the stuff we have going on with, you know, Career Academy and MEPC, you know, great, it's the online courses and all that stuff, but to have some place that we could funnel them for the actual cert itself.
Absolutely.
You know, to actually take, you know, do the, you know, take the test and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of that missing piece from that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes, we're located at 1400 Oakman Boulevard in Detroit, Michigan, and we are, again, a certification hub. You can come there and take your test. You would have to call me, Linda Green, and the phone number was given out a little bit earlier, but I'm the person to call.
You can give it out again. It's okay.
Okay. The direct number to call for the certification testing would be area code 313-494-4284. And you would ask for Linda. Of course, I would probably answer the phone. But I actually operate the certification center. And again, we're CompTIA A+ Certification Center, Cisco Certification, Cisco Certified Networking Center.
This is the end point we needed for something else we have going on. We'll talk during the break.
Okay.
Now, what about students who go through your program and want to go further, like into college credit? Do you guys work anything with local colleges, or how do they continue their training?
We do work with local colleges. We do. We're partners in the apprenticeship program with WC3D. But we also have a program called MC, the Information Management Systems Engineering Program, where our students go to both Lawrence Tech and Wayne State University. And usually they work at organizations like Ford Motor Company, Fast Switch, Blue Cross Blue Shield. Some of our students actually still work there who are in the Information Management Systems Engineering Program.
It's like full life cycle of your IT career right here.
Yes.
Okay, so
starts here.
Craziness. I learned something new today.
You can call 313-494-4300. We're also having
an apprenticeship fair. Dude, if nothing else, I'm having him do voiceovers for us.
Let him finish, for crying out loud.
I just lost my job.
Yeah. Oh, was that you? I'm sorry. It's 313-494-4300. We're also having an apprenticeship fair. It's at Focus Hope, 1400 Oakland Boulevard in Detroit. It'll be on April 6th, and you can call 313-494-4300.
I was going to ask him to read me bedtime stories, but I think that'd be weird. I don't know.
It's 313-494-4300.
Are you my mother? But that fair, though, so what is that?
Well, we'll be attracting potential students, potential employers. All our partners will be there. We'll be showcasing all of our academic programs and our community outreach programs. It'll be a fun time at Focus Hope. And again, to get more information on our apprenticeship fair that will be held on April 6th at Focus Hope, you can call 313-494-4300.
And we'll put that in the recap, and we'll put it on our social media and Twitter and all that.
I know you have a website.
Great. Right. www.focushope.edu.
Education. We're all about it.
Okay. Perfect. Well, hey. Kevin, Linda, appreciate you guys coming out. We look forward to working with you in the future. We're not just stopping here.
We definitely want to talk to you about other stuff we need to yak about.
But hey, this is the IT in the D show, and we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey guys, it's Timog, Bruce Leroy from The Last Dragon. You're listening to the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening. This is the IT in the D Show segment 4, episode 132. You can find that we're broadcasting live here in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Ferndale, Michigan.
This is Bob the Sales Guy here with Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG. Find us online, itinthed.com.
Because still, we are all things IT in the D.
And you just keep trying. It's we love you. We really do. And yeah, good luck. Good luck.
Hey, a couple other things real quick. So, like, you know, we do have our Pink Slip Party event coming up on March 10th. Hit the site for that. We'll be at Great Lakes Comic Con this weekend. Hit the site for that. We talk about all that stuff. But apparently Transformers is getting ready to fire up a new movie, and they are going to be filming here in Detroit again.
You know.
So if you missed your opportunity the first few times around, there's a casting call.
I was supposed to be in Red Dawn, actually, when they were filming here. I had to take a whole week off, and I was going to be one of the football players, and it was up in, like, northern Michigan somewhere.
You got cut.
No, my boss said, if you take the week off to go film Red Dawn, I'm going to fight your ass. You know, it's such, and it would, you know, but it's not,
let me live my dreams.
It's not glamorous, though. We know friends that have been in, like, Batman and Superman. It's like there's like 14-hour days.
They feed, oh, and it completely sucks.
They feed you like Mr. Pita with no mayonnaise, right? And dry,
and you may still end up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah,
you're right. And you, I think you make, if you're lucky, $8 an hour. If you're union, you make $8 an hour. Otherwise, you make like $12 a day.
Yes, yeah, so I honestly don't know if I've ever talked about this on our show before. I'm in the Pelican Brief for a grand total of like a quarter second, because they filmed outside of our office building in D.C. For a little while. And you can see me walking into the building. Yay. That's, yeah.
I was not in Need for Speed. I'm pissed.
Yeah, your giant head was not in Need for Speed after getting yelled at.
They told me to stop walking at CompuWare. They were doing loops in the middle, and I said, I got a meeting, you know. And I'm like, so he's yelling at me to get out of the scene. And I wasn't, I didn't make the movie. I was pissed.
And then we have to talk about this because it's sad news from downtown. We always talk about all the great stuff going on downtown. This is sad news from downtown. Bucharest Grill at Park Bar is no more.
It's not sad.
No, it's sad.
You want to know why it's not sad?
But it's sad.
Because I just ate Bucharest Grill at Corktown 3 minutes up the road. What's so sad about Bucharest Grill closing at Park Bar?
Okay, change. My opinion's changing.
It's right across the street from Slow's. They have a takeout.
That's where that is?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I just took my kids after I went to the Shinola last Friday and got me some Bucharest Grill at the takeout on Michigan Ave in Corktown. So that's why everybody's upset about Park Bar closing. I'm like, that was a pain in the ass to park. Park Bar sucked. It was tiny.
Oh, yeah, I hated Park Bar. So love Bucharest.
You have a little takeout joint now. It's about the size of a Tellway right on Michigan Ave. Yeah, okay. So you can have your shawarma. I had my shawarma. Life is good. I bought extra shawarma, so, you know.
You bring it home.
Absolutely.
Save it for later.
So if you were talking about movies, I got to talk about TV because every once in a while there's shows that come out, and we talk about them once in a while, but there's two that are just awesome that I've been – Vinyl. If you have not watched Vinyl.
Got it on the TiVo.
It's written by Scorsese and Mick Jagger, and it's set
– Yeah, the first episode's 2 hours. Are they all like that?
No. It's an hour episode, but the pilot was two hours. But it's set in 1973 New York music scene. And the star of the thing is like a record executive trying to find the next big sound. And it's perfect. I mean, it's everything like a Scorsese. It almost has a little bit of Departed in it. It's phenomenal. And then Billions, if you have not caught that.
No.
It is it's basically a hedge fund manager. It's the guy, the ginger guy from
Homeland. We were talking about this.
Yeah. But it's got Pig Vomit in it from
the Howard Stern movie. Yeah,
right. And it's
how sad that that's his legacy. But yeah,
that's all he'll ever be known as.
Damien Lewis is the guy. Yes.
Thank you, Damien Lewis. Yeah. But Billions is seriously, it's one of the better written shows I've ever like come across.
The opening scene in the first episode, and I'm like, I'm done. I'm in. So I'm not going to spoil it. So just go watch the first episode, the first 5 minutes. I'm like, this is a show I'm going to like.
Oh, and they're six in, so you can binge watch it on us, you know, real easy.
Okay, and I did finally sit down and watch Entourage, the movie.
The movie? Yeah.
You were right. It's what it needed to be.
Nothing good.
It wasn't
nothing
great.
Bad.
It wasn't horrible. It just
that was like part of nostalgia was, when I had a roommate. We would sit down and we'd always watch Entourage and True Blood. That was like our Sunday night. That
like my biggest annoyance is they didn't go with the traditional opening. Like how do you have Entourage the movie and you don't have – that opening sequence with that, driving through the city and the suicide.
Is that Cadillac in production, by the way?
Oh, I want that car.
It's a Cadillac, but it looks like the 67 Suicide Door Lincoln Continental.
Nice. They had it at the auto show, I think, this year. It's coming out next year.
Oh, yeah. Daddy want. That's the car I will – oh, my God. That's the coolest car I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
But what – I was going to say, like, TV-wise, movie-wise, what the hell
Walking
is
Dead.
The up one – it's the down episode. They do an up episode, down episode. They've been doing that since the show started.
Carl, there's zombies around. You got to keep an eye out for them, Carl. An eye out, Carl.
It's the worst show you ever told. Worst show you ever told.
They're doing good. You know what? You said the last episode was slow. I kind of liked it. Just from a good break from all of the intensity of the first episode, it was kind of nice to have a little Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure with Rick and Daryl running around through the countryside.
Training for the marathon. But you know what? I officially feel old. Like, I usually don't feel old until, like, my knees creak in the morning. But I officially feel old because Ferris Bueller is celebrating his 30th birthday.
And
30.
And there's a conference. There's a convention, and it's the weekend after Motor City Comic Con. And I kind of feel like we're going to Chicago.
You know what the worst part about that movie was? The stupid Shake It Up Baby Parade.
Which they're going to reenact.
That's like me walking into Michael's holding hands with Rosie O'Donnell sitting in that parade. That was the most uncomfortable, awful scene. Like, if you're going to recreate the end of Animal House, right. Yeah, I'm all in. You can recreate the parade. I hate parades as it is, but recreate the Ferris Bueller Parade, kiss my ass. You can go.
What would you do? What would you do at a Ferris festival?
Well, they have
talking about Ferris Bueller and properties of
the
Ferris
properties
Bueller.
Of Ferris Bueller. Yeah. It's demented and sad, but social
merchandise.
Exactly. No, but you go on a tour of all the different locations that they were in when they shot. You know, those that are still around and available. Apparently, they've built a replica of, you know, Ferris's bedroom and that kind of stuff, because that house has been completely remodeled, apparently. But the house where Cameron's house was actually just recently sold, and the guy kept it as is.
Well, if I can go to the restaurant and say I'm Abe Froman, he'll.
That's why he's Abe Froman, Sausage King of Chicago. I kind of want to go. I'm not going to lie.
Private meet and greet with the stars.
Exactly.
T-shirts.
We've spent dumber. We've spent more than $300 on dumber stuff.
At corner bars. I'm Jägermeister. I don't want to go. You can go.
It's Chicago.
It's 30 years old.
I know. That's the part that hurts a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. As long as they didn't do the parade, I'd totally go.
But speaking of feeling old and from that concept of not necessarily understanding relevance, like, everything has a Kickstarter now, and everything is all about reboots now. Like, we've talked, you know, whether it's Voltron or, you know, another Transformers movie.
Yeah, but that's good.
Yeah, so there's a Kickstarter out there, and we met one of the people involved in this last year at Motor City. There's a Kickstarter out there to do a Good Times reunion movie.
Reunion movie or like a movie?
Like a movie.
Like recast?
No, the cast.
Ah, kiss my ass. You know what, though? James Evans Sr. looks like – you've seen a picture of them lately?
Uh-huh.
Like, Fiona is freaking gorgeous.
Oh, yes, she is.
And James Sr. looks like he could, like, play football.
Today.
And Michael looks like he's Yoda.
Yep.
Like, that
– Yeah, how'd that happen?
That cast took it. Like, JJ is an – asshole. I'm just going to throw that right out there. All I wanted him to say was the IT and the D show is dynamite. That's it, right? And he's at Comic-Con.
And we were going to buy all of, like, we were willing to buy all of the things from him.
And he's like, he looks me straight in the face. He's like, I don't do that shit. I go, why are you here? This is what you do. JJ. But that picture is like, Fiona's like, what, she's 60.
Yeah.
And she's like Christie Brinkley hot. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? Janet Jackson going to be on? I don't want to, like, what are you going to do?
They said the original cast.
For crying out loud. Is Florida still alive?
No. I don't think she is.
So there's only $8,100 pledged of their $1 million goal.
$1 million?
With 10 days to go, so no.
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
But if you pledge $10,000, you could have a private party in Mexico in a private yacht.
What?
Seriously.
With so Janet Jackson?
The damn package. Two of your friends invited to a private cast reunion party in Mexico on a private yacht. In all caps, we will have a good time.
Cheap. That's so bad.
Dynamite.
Outstanding. So I did love the story that apparently $100 bills are what is making the American economy insecure. And so there was a recommendation that came out that the $100 bill should go away.
Why?
Because apparently the primary users of $100 bills are drug lords, gangs, that kind of stuff.
It's not.
So if you hey, I'm just quoting the study that was done.
Casino ATMs, that's the major user of you ever taken money out of the casino?
Casino ATM spit out hundreds?
That's all they spit out.
I don't know that I've ever spit out. I don't think I've ever taken out money.
It's a shoot over your nose.
No, I don't think I've ever taken out money at an ATM at a casino.
I'm making fun of myself.
Well, they talk about weight, like, right? So the amount of weight. They're also talking about eliminating the 500-euro note.
Right.
Like, because it's really easy to smuggle a bunch of 500-euros over, but if you have to do it in smaller bills, well, then increases the space and the weight and all those other things, making it more difficult. That's what they're claiming.
Well, Canadians get talking about it. We were talking about it today. They're trying to get rid of the $5 bill, and they already got rid of the penny.
Now, that's smart.
Oh, the penny should have been abolished. I can't tell you how long ago.
But what are they going to do with the $5 bill? You got to walk around. It's bad enough they have toonies, right? You have loonies, toonies. Your pocket is going to weigh like 40 pounds. If you have like $30,
it's got to help you if you got to buy a Coke out of a vending machine and all you have is your 20,
right?
And you get $18.75 in quarters back.
Right.
Our one Canadian listener is just like, "Woo, they're talking about us."
Too bad he called them Canada.
Canuckistan. Yeah.
Right.
But interesting fact: in 1969, there was a $10,000 bill. Did you guys?
There was
a ten, a five, a one, and a $500.
Wasn't
bill.
It Johnson on the $10,000?
But they're still legal currency. But if any of the banks get them, they go to the Fed, and the Fed destroys them.
Yes.
Interesting fact.
But what's the big deal about hundreds? That's so stupid.
There's hundred. There. Well, in that same vein, I mean, there were 500s, $1,000 bills. I mean, they're still out there.
Bring back the $2 bill. That's money.
Racetracks. That's the only place you see $2 bills.
No, like take them to Mexico, leave them for tips for the bartenders. That's like the thing to do.
But you get them at racetracks. That's the only place you get $2 bills is racetracks.
Yeah, the other weird thing is like, aren't most crimes nowadays Bitcoin and like cryptocurrency and like online?
Well, and wire transfers. Yes. And like how many people are truly running around with suitcases full of $100 bills?
I sent a trunk of hundreds to my offshore bank account in the Caymans.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. I don't know.
No, because the guy that just robbed the truck from the casino, that was all cash.
Yeah.
There's still cash. Every retail store
is cash.
But
again, casino.
Right. See? I don't even gamble. What the hell do I know all this stuff about casinos? Craziness.
Want to be a player.
I am. What are you talking about?
Speaking of getting rid of things, did you guys see that FCC proposal to get rid of cable boxes?
Yes.
Or they open up the standard, right?
Makes me super happy.
So basically, let that happen.
It's just a proposal. The proposal's been approved. It's now got 60 days for public comment, but at some point, we could basically get our cable on our other devices, like our Rokus or our Google boxes or Apple TVs.
Which the biggest scam in the business. We already are.
Yeah.
HBO to go, Showtime to go, Hulu with everything coming out the next day. We're already there. This is just one more shot or one more, instance of legislation trying to catch up to technology.
If consumers would wake their ass up and realize, like, I read a thing that goes back to when Blockbuster, their biggest line item of profit was late fees.
Right? Absolutely.
Banks take in, what, $8 billion a year in late fees.
Oh,
$8 billion was just what they charged me last year, I think.
Right. No, so that, we talked about that. So, So another way to say that is that banks made $50 billion off of people who didn't have enough money.
Oh, there was NSFs and late fees.
Yeah.
$8 billion was just late fees. But then, like, if you look at, like, the $12 line item on your cable bill that you've been paying for 15 years, it's like you just went to a rent-to-own.
Well, it's like the cable modem.
Right. No, it's the same thing. Yeah. Cable. That's what I'm talking about. But it's like going to a rent-to-own and doing the math. Like,
I'm spending $37,000 on this smartphone.
A 32-inch TV, right? What? $19.95 a month for the rest of your life.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
It's actually true. The average U.S. household spends $232 a year to rent a cable box. which you could buy an Apple TV for $100 and never have to pay for it again.
Right.
Seriously.
Well, and I've got, and shame on me. There are still cable boxes in my house. I've had, you know, the Roku, the Comcast, you know, the Amazon Fire Stick for 2 months now. And I just haven't had the time to sit down and figure out what goes where and which, you know, which app catches the shows that everybody watches and that kind of stuff. I mean, I've used them just because, I mean, there's been times where, like, whether it's a DVR shift or something like that, where, you know, I wind up grabbing a past episode off of, you know, HBO to go, or I've been catching up on Game of Thrones finally.
I'm stuck. I can't unplug. Baby TV is holding my house hostage. It's the worst.
It was the only thing that would calm your child down at Kalahari.
What is baby TV for, like, the uninitiate, people with no babies?
It's basically the most repetitive, worst station in the history of humanity ever. It makes, like, you know, Sesame Street.
It makes Yo Gabba Gabba look like an AP physics class.
And it's like, you know, it's like all the characters are like the science that went into this, like the characters all like, uh-oh, and oopsie, like all the words that kids, and it repeats all day long. And I find myself just like, okay, I'm going in the living room, the baby TV's on, and I'm going to read a book, and I just leave it on, and I sing the songs.
And you wake up in the middle of the night screaming.
Oh, it's slowly worming into my head, and it's never going to, it's like Alien, it's never going to leave.
It's the little worms from Wrath of Khan.
And it's holding, you know, I want to charge my daughter when she gets older, like that $2,000 a year where I couldn't unplug because that stupid baby too. It's coming off of your per diem for college. Kiss my ass. Swear to God. Drives me absolutely nuts, but I can't unplug. I tried. What isn't happening?
Yeah, we're close. I mean, I kind of figured out everything. It's just a matter of doing it, because I mean, you can't get completely away. You can get rid of the cable boxes. You still need the modem.
Watch your, when you unplug, watch your wireless, or I'm sorry, your internet bill slowly creep to like $150 a month. Watch. Like,
oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
Right now you're paying like $70. Once you unplug, watch, because, you know, for $20 more you could have your TV back.
Right,
because I remember when I first bought AT&T, like every time I go to get my bill lower, they're like, "We'll just get rid of service." So then I get rid of the phone, then I get rid of that. Right, and I'm paying more now, like with half the service when I first started, than when I first.
Well,
started.
It's like, so like the last time I got into it with Comcast, it was cheaper. Like I had that stupid triple play thing. It was cheaper for me to leave the phone on my bill and get that triple play thing. I have literally never hooked a phone up to it. It has never – and I'm like, it has literally never been used. I said, look through your records. We've never had an IP phone in this house. It just doesn't happen. And she's like, well, yeah, but so if we take the $10 off that gets rid of that, then that gets rid of the bundle pricing, and then everything else jumps up like $50.
And you wonder why everybody hates you, cable companies.
Exactly.
That shall not be named.
Those cable boxes, too, are like super energy inefficient. Have you seen that? That there are studies that say that they could be worse than your refrigerator.
Oh, absolutely.
That they consume like 36 watts just sitting there in standby mode.
Oh, and they burn a lot of heat.
It's crazy, yeah.
I got four of them going to my house like nonstop.
That's more than your refrigerator, Bob.
Yeah. And I got two refrigerators.
That's more than both your refrigerators.
One just for this beer.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, hey, let's take a once around the room, wrap things up for the night.
What's your name?
Dave.
Oh, you said around the room. I
pointed that way.
Oh, so
hi,
Nuri.
Dave. I am Nuri.
So, Focus Hope, we find you at focushope.edu.
Yes, focushope.edu.
313.
You can call 313-494-4300. I'd like to invite you to our apprenticeship fair on April the 6th.
April the 6th. Looking forward to it. Leo, always a pleasure having you come out.
Yeah, love being here.
Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. We'll see you in a month, or we'll figure okay. something out.
Sure.
But always nice having you. A great conversation.
Thank you.
And,
has to be a regularly scheduled thing.
Absolutely. But on behalf of me and Dave and Nuri, we appreciate you hanging out with us. You don't have to drink up your drinks. Actually, you do have to drink up your drinks. Get your phone numbers. You don't have to go home. We just have to get the hell out of here. We'll see you next week. Beat it.
See
it.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
Long live Flash. You've saved your ass. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubble gum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy. Ain't the run. The run.
Game over, man. Game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill. You need to cool that shit out. And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Bob loves it in the camp.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in the can.
Joe owned the cheese. Owns. 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 Owns.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy. Shut up, Mimsy. Shut up, Mimsy.
Why would, like, Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why is this not marketing?
The alphabet.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet? Yeah, so now I'm just, like, doing, like, stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want.
Yeah. Kiss my ass, go home, unplug, get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
You're so white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me.
I love this city. I was banging on the wang.
Really? Should we talk about the tag team? Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.